In the sixth Aliyah of Parshas Vayechi, Yaakov finishes the brachos of his sons, and the language of the pasuk is Vayivarech Osam Ish Asher Kivirchaso Birach Osam. So this language switching first from the singular to the plural, he blessed each one according to his bracha, he blessed them. And that language, the Sfas Emes explains, is because while each one got an individualized bracha tailored to his own personal qualities, the development of that bracha was for the service of the klal, of all of them together. He explains in that sense the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where Hillel comments, "Emein ani li mili v'chishna ani la'atzmi ma'ani," that it's true that each of us have our own individual skills and abilities that we are meant to develop for ourselves, but we do so so that we can contribute to the klal. So, "Emein ani li mili," I have to be for myself and develop my own abilities, but I don't do that for my own purposes, I do that for the klal, I do that for the unit as a whole. So then, following this, Yaakov passes on. The language of the pasuk is not that he dies, it's vayigva, he's gathered up to his people, and Gemara has the phrase, Yaakov avinu lomes, but he is indeed buried, and move on. And following that, the brothers are afraid of what will happen to them now that their father is no longer alive. And we find that they send a message to Yosef, and the message is a little bit questionable as to its accuracy. The pasuk says, "Vayitzavu al Yosef lemor, avicha tziva lefdeimosu lemor." They send a message saying that your father commanded before he died, "Kosam ruli Yosef, ana sana pesha achecha v'chatasam kirag malucha, v'yata sana lefesha avdei Elohei avicha, v'yevch Yosef v'dabram elav." The message is, you should say to Yosef, please forgive this offense and the guilt of your brothers who treated you in such a harsh way. Please forgive the offense of these servants of the God of your father's house. And Yosef hears this message and he cries. So the problem is that it doesn't seem that Yaakov actually gave this instruction. And Rashi comments that Shinu b'shipdei ha-shalom, that they changed the truth because of their desire for peace. And the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yevamos on Daf Samachay Amud Aleph that that was actually acceptable, that we don't condemn them for this despite the prohibition in Parshas Mishpatim of Midvar Sheker Teochak, that this is acceptable because of the desire for peace, says the Gemara, Mutter Lishanos Midvar HaShalom, that it's permissible to change the truth. It doesn't use the language of L'Shaker, perhaps that's precise, but to alter the truth, Mipnei HaShalom. And the Gemara then goes on to give two other statements, a statement that takes it further. It says it's not only permissible, but it's a mitzvah, l'shanos mipnei hashalom, that's derived from a pasuk telling us that Shmuel Hanavi, when he was given the mission to anoint King David, David HaMelech, that he didn't want to do it because he was afraid that Shaul would kill him when he heard that he was going to anoint another king in his lifetime. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him an instruction that he should take an animal with him and create the impression that he was going to bring a korban rather than anoint a new king. And there you have him creating this false impression, and it's not something that we're endorsing afterwards, but this is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly instructed him to do. So apparently it's not only mutter, but it's a mitzvah. And then the Gemara goes further to say that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself does this, because in Parshas Vayera, when Sari hears that she's going to have a child and she doesn't believe it, and she says, "Here, my husband is so old, it's not possible." And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates that to Avram, he says it as if she had said that she was old. So even God is willing himself to be Mishana in order to preserve the peace between a man and his wife. So these are fascinating ideas, and the Achronim discuss how exactly to understand what happened to the principle of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. And among the suggestions, there are two basic theories. Either it could be that there's a values clash here, that we have to uphold the ideals of Emes and Shalom. The pasuk in Zechariah tells us, "Emes v'Shalom ahavu." These are two cherished principles, but perhaps if we can't honor both of them at the same time because there's a clash. So we have to pick one, and reasonably we could take either one, and perhaps that's the first position of Mutter Lashanas Pnei HaShalom. Or alternatively, if we say Mitzvah Lashanas Pnei HaShalom, it could be that there's still a values clash, but that Shalom is the winner because perhaps that's the ideal that takes priority. Or it could be that it isn't really a values clash, that perhaps the Isser of Midvar Sheker Tirchak doesn't always apply in every situation, and when it's a statement that's actually helpful, that's not harmful. The Sefer Yireyim, for example, was of the position that Midvar Sheker Tirchak is an Averi Ben Adam L'Chaveru, and it applies specifically when you're misleading someone to harm them. And perhaps if it's a helpful untruth, then that's not a part of Midvar Sheker Tirchak to begin with. So if that's the situation, so it's not an Isser of Sheker to begin with. So then Shalom is the clear victor. So that is a discussion overall, and it may affect the issue of whether we say mutter or mitzvah. If we believe that there is a tension between emes and shalom, and that continues to be the case even when the motivation is shalom, so then that could understand the position of mutter. But if we believe that there's no issur of sheker here at all, so then we may be more inclined to take the position that it is a mitzvah l'shanos. Also related to this question is, what exactly do we ask in terms of the type of misrepresentation? Is one permitted to say something that is completely false? Or is the Gemara being precise in its language and saying l'shanos rather than l'shaker, because it's not permissible to say something completely false, and instead one should just say something that is a little bit misleading, but it's not permissible to actually say the complete opposite of the truth. So in this context, the Aruch Lener has the understanding that it really isn't permissible to say an absolute falsehood, and that's why the Gemara does not use the word l'shaker, and he assumes that the prohibition of Midvar Sheker Tirchak does continue to apply, and that's why one should not say absolute falsehood. And he comments in terms of what's going on here in the Psukim, that they actually did not say a complete falsehood, and that's also why they sent a message instead of going to Yosef themselves, that they realized that if they spoke to Yosef directly, he would be able to figure out that they didn't actually get this instruction from Yaakov. So what they did was they went to a messenger, and they didn't actually spell out to him that they had this message from Yaakov. They said to the messenger, go tell Yosef something. And then they also said to the messenger that Yaakov told us that Yosef should forgive us. So the messenger got the impression that that was Yaakov's message. And when he went to Yosef, so then he gave Yosef the impression that this all came from Yaakov. But the brothers didn't actually say that. They just caused a misleading impression. And all of that got transmitted to Yosef. So that was all within the Aruch Lener's suggestion that there isn't actually a permission to be completely dishonest and to say something false. One is only allowed to be misleading, but not to say absolute sheker. And others disagree that one can say something completely false because there isn't an actual prohibition of sheker here. The Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer, so he writes, there is a preference to try to avoid absolute sheker, but if it's unavoidable, so then there is still a permission to do that, l'man hashalom. Some other ramifications of the two understandings. There is a discussion in the Tshuvas Yad Eliyahu about whether one can do this on a regular basis or whether this is just something that's allowed if it comes up occasionally. There was also a position that an anonymous Talmud Chacham had that Rav Kook quotes in his Sfarim, and he disagrees with, that this anonymous Talmud Chacham took the position that this is only a heter for somebody who is generally honest and once in a while has a need to say something in order to preserve the peace. But somebody who has an issue with honesty and needs to fix that midah, so he has to go to the extreme of honesty, and he shouldn't avail himself of the heter l'shanos v'pnei hashalom. And Rav Kook disagreed with that, and he understood that this is a mitzvah l'shanos v'pnei hashalom, and you can try to improve your midos on your own time, but one is not allowed to avoid this when necessary because it's a mitzvah l'shanos v'pnei hashalom. There's also a discussion of whether this is something one can do proactively, or is it something that one can only do if one's absolutely forced. Some have suggested the Sefer Kolch VeYitzchak, he suggests that that's the machlokas beis Hillel and beis Shammai in the Gemara in Subas, that the opinion is recorded there of Beis Hillel that we sing at weddings. It's a famous statement of Ketz Merakdim Lifnei Hakala. Beis Hillel tells us to say Kalna v'chasuda, and Beis Shammai disagreed that perhaps that's not the actual opinion. The Torah says Midvar Sheker Tirchak, so you could only say what you actually believe, Kala Kamoshihi. So Sternhill suggests that the machlokas is that Beis Shammai agrees that it's Mutzah L'shanas v'pnei Hashalom, but that's only if you need to, if somebody's forcing you to say something. If nobody's asking, so then you shouldn't volunteer to say something you don't actually believe in. Well, Beis Hillel, apparently, if you're disagreeing with that opinion, they're maintaining that you can actually voluntarily, proactively say something that you don't actually believe in. There is also a position of the Sefer Chassidim that the Magen Avraham quotes, where he writes that if somebody asks you for money and you don't want to give him any money, and you might be inclined to say that you don't have any money on the understanding that it's mutter l'shanas b'nei hashalom, and many would agree that that is indeed permissible under that basis, but the Sefer Chassidim had the view that you're not allowed to say that because the hetter l'shanas b'nei hashalom is only for things in the past, but not for things in the present or in the future. And the commentaries all try to figure out where that comes from. It doesn't necessarily seem to work with many of the sources, and they suggest that Chazal were afraid that the hetter could be taken out of hand, and therefore it had to be limited somehow, but they still struggle to understand the basis for this limitation. And perhaps where he's coming from is that he also feels that there's a tension here between the ideal of emes and of shalom, and that preferably there wouldn't be a compromise of either value. And what he's suggesting is that yes, if there's an absolute need to compromise, so then there is a heter l'shanos v'pnei hashalom. It's permissible to fudge the truth for the sake of peace. But if there's a third option, it's better to go for the third option. So in this situation, there really are three choices. You could lie and say you don't have any money, or you could say, I have money, I don't want to give it to you, and that would be starting a fight. Or there's a third choice, you could give the money. You don't necessarily want to do that, but it is theoretically a third choice. And perhaps that's what the Sefer Chassidim means when he says only about things in the past, meaning if the facts are set in stone and there isn't any way to change the reality, so then you may have to choose between emes and shalom. But if there's a way to choose which you can do, because you can still change the facts, so then that would be preferable than compromising either value, and perhaps that's what he means. And in fact, the Lutzke Rav in the Yoznayim LaTorah, so he suggests the language, the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim, when it says, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, and poses the question, why does it use that language? Why doesn't the Torah use one of the four words of prohibition? Hishomer, Lav, Pen, Al. What does it mean to say Tirchak, stay away from? And the Lutzke Rav suggests that it means that we know that we can't say absolutely never lie, because there are times when it's necessary, and there are times when it's mutter, such as when it's Bipnei HaShalom. But Tirchak, you should try to avoid being in those situations. You should stay far away from needing to compromise one of your values. And somebody who really loves both of these ideals, as the Pasuk in Zechariah says, V'ha'emes v'shalom ahavu, will try as hard as possible to maintain them both and not compromise either. So Yosef's response to the brothers is essentially to reassure them. And the Pasuk says, V'yomer aleihem Yosef al tiro, ki hasaches elohim ani, don't worry, am I in God's place? V'yatem chashavtam alai ra, Elohim chashav l'tova, laman aso kayom hazeh l'hachayos amrav. That you had intentions that were bad for me, and God had other plans, and it worked out very well, so I should do good things here. And the Or HaChaim has a comment over here that mystified some of the ones who came after him. The Or HaChaim says that when Yosef is telling him it all worked out for the best, that this is comparable to somebody who tried to poison someone else, and it ended up that the drinks got switched, and the individual didn't drink the poison, and everything worked out okay in the end. All's well that ends well. And everyone poses the question, is the suggestion here that attempted murder is okay? It doesn't matter as long as the victim didn't die. Don't we have a notion? The Gemara says that if somebody tried to eat non-kosher food, and by accident he ended up eating kosher food because the food got switched, he still needs to have a kapara. He still needs to atone for his bad intentions. So here we're saying that an attempted murder is okay. He doesn't have to worry about it because it didn't end up actually having that negative impact. Seems like a very difficult idea. So there are many who suggest to explain that Or HaChaim, among them the Kli Chemda and many others, that this is perhaps explained by Yisod that the Svarim have when it comes to mitzvos ben adam l'chavero, that the notion of onus rachmana patre, that you can be forgiven for not being able to accomplish what you can't do as long as you have good intentions, that that only works for dinim ben adam l'makum, for your efforts towards God, because he knows what you're trying to do, he can credit you for your efforts. But human beings, they can't credit you for what you're trying to do, they only know results. If somebody is starving and he needs a meal and you're not able to provide him because you have a good excuse, because you're busy with something else, you're osik b'mitzvah or something along those lines, so that's not going to help. He's still going to collapse. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can credit you for what you're trying. Human beings aren't able to do that. So therefore, when it comes to mitzvos ben adam l'chavero, we have to focus on the results. So there are some who suggest that this is the other side of that, that just as we focus on having to obtain the results for ben adam l'chavero, so too, that's all that matters here, as long as there was a good result. So therefore, there's nothing to have to atone for if the negative intent didn't actually materialize. And that seems like a very difficult answer, because the truth is it would seem one has to be machmir for both. The Rambam writes in Shmona Prakim that one of the distinctions between the Chukim and Mishpatim is that when it comes to the Mishpatim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have a personality that lines up with the values of those mitzvos, and that would seem to impact that when it comes to our behavior and how we treat people, we need to have the right intentions, not only the right impact. So when it comes to B'Adam L'Chavero, we really need to be a machmir for both. We need to get the right results, that's true, but we also need to have the right intentions. So it wouldn't seem like it would be no problem to try to hurt somebody as long as it doesn't have the intended effect. So there are those who have a slightly different version of this idea. For example, Rav Yitzchok Shmalkis, in his Tshuvas Beis Yitzchok, he understands that what's different here is that it's not just that the bad thing didn't happen, but it's a good thing that happened. And that's the emphasis here in this pasuk. The Meiri writes in his Chibur HaTshuva that if somebody plotted against his friend unsuccessfully, so he does not have to ask for mechila, but he does still need to do vidui in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because there is still an avera ben adam l'makom. So that may be relevant here, because there is a question that many ask, that Rabbeinu Bachya has a comment about the brothers, that they were never actually explicitly forgiven by Yosef, and that's why, historically, the event of the Asara Harugei Malchus happens, because there's still that price to pay for the Avera of Mechiras Yosef. So many raise the question that it sounds from the Psukim here that Yosef does indeed forgive them, so why is there still that consequence to pay? So among the suggestions is that there are perhaps different aspects of Mechila. There's more of a mominous kind of mechila, where one is willing to relinquish any claims that one may have against an offender, but there's also a interpersonal aspect where one is also willing to get past whatever hurt there is and whatever anguish there is, and that's a whole different level of mechila, so we could possibly have one without the other. And there's also the aspect of ben adam l'chavero and ben adam l'makum that's in every avera that takes place on the interpersonal level. So if one relinquishes the claims and says, I'm ochel, it doesn't necessarily give a full kapara to the offender unless he's ready to do tshuva on the level of bin adam l'makom as well. So it's possible that here Yosef is saying, I don't have any problem with you, I'm ochel, I'm okay with it, but the brothers didn't fully do tshuva bin adam l'makom, and therefore there was still a unfortunate price to pay. So there's so many lessons here, once again, about the themes of tshuva and of mechila and of interpersonal offense and growth. And once again, so much to learn from in these very intense parshios.